Good morning, everybody. My name's Rachel. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm glad that Chet cleared it up out of the way, that I'm not Cesar and I'm not from Puerto Rico. But I am Rachel, and I am from the Basic Group in Salisbury, North Carolina. And I am grateful and amazed and terrified to be with you this morning. So Chet did call about 6 o'clock, and I told him, yes, I can do that. Thank you for asking. I'm going to go throw up now. But then what he said was, throw up twice for me too. And Chet, that did not make me feel any more confident or comfortable about this. But anyways, he said to tell my story and a little bit about the Southeast. So I'll do my best with that. I came to you guys when I was 18 years old, a broken, hollow shell of a woman. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous at 18, this wasn't the first time that I had come to AA. I had come before when I was in and out of jail twice at 16 years old in treatment centers. And I came not really expecting AA to work, but just I was desperate. You know, I was somebody who the first time I came, I thought that this thing AA sounded really good, and you guys seemed like really genuinely nice people, and AA seemed like it would be a great thing for you because you're an alcoholic. But when I was 16, I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. And frankly, at 18, I didn't know that I was either. I thought that I was a bad person. It's not just that I couldn't stop drinking, but I couldn't stop lying. I couldn't stop cheating. I couldn't stop being promiscuous. I couldn't stop hurting the people that I love. And I didn't know that all of that was simply untreated alcoholism. But when I came to you the very, very first time, right out of treatment at 16 years old, seeds were planted. And so at 18, I knew where I could come. And you welcomed me with open arms, and I'm very, very thankful for that. And I know that I was loved sober, and I was, you know, just taken under people's wing and shown the love that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to come to things like this, to conventions, and in North Carolina we have eatin' meetings, and so that's like an eating meeting, a covered dish dinner, and you know, picnics and barbecues and conventions and retreats. And it was just so much fun experiencing the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that you could be sober and not do that, that you could be sober and not come to the International Convention. I didn't know that that's an experience that some people don't have. And I'm really, really thankful and really fortunate that those people who picked me up when I was new exposed me to this, because this is an amazing thing. It's an awesome thing. And also very much at that same time that they were exposing me to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, they were teaching me the steps. They were teaching me recovery. And I remember the person that I asked to be my sponsor, I thought we were incredibly different. I thought we were like night and day, and I didn't want to ask her to be my sponsor. There was a person in my home group who had been sober since almost the time that I was born, and he shared it like every time that he shared his sobriety date. And so I thought that, like, oh, this guy must be like the AA guru. And so I wanted him to be my sponsor. And he told me no, and I'm really thankful that he told me no. But he told me to ask this lady named Valerie. And like I said, I thought we were incredibly different. But it turns out that we were exactly the same, exactly the same. And she helped me to identify myself as an alcoholic, because like I said, when I came to you guys, I didn't know that. And she told me, you know, we talked about what it meant to be an alcoholic. And she took me to the big book. You know, she took me to the doctor's opinion and explained to me the twofold nature of our illness, that we have that mental obsession and then that phenomenon of craving. And I'll tell you, when you guys talked to me about your drinking, and when I read the big book for the first time, I thought, how did you know? You know, how did these guys, like 80 years ago, how did they know who I was? Because I always thought that I was so different. I didn't know that I was drinking because I had that obsession, and that I couldn't control how much I drank and what was going to happen because of that physical allergy. So as soon as she showed me that, I knew. You know, I was able to surrender to the fact that I am an alcoholic. And, you know, part of her leading me through the steps, part of our fellowship is opening up ourselves to one another and letting each other really get to know, you know, letting you get to know who I am. And I'm really fortunate that I've had sponsors who've done that. They've modeled for me how to invest in somebody and how to really build a relationship. And, you know, I'm somebody who always thought that if you knew who I was, you wouldn't like me. If you knew the things that I had done, if you knew the feelings that I had felt and the things that I had thought, that you wouldn't want to be around me. And in AA, I found the opposite to be true, that if we open up ourselves to each other, if we just open up ourselves to each other and go ahead and just let go of that fear and in that vulnerability, God can come in and God can do the work and change us. And, you know, when I did my fifth step with my sponsor, I remember, like, there's stuff that I wanted to hold back. And she was telling me some things. I guess she could sense that I was holding some things back. And so she started opening up to me and she told me some things that had happened in her life. And I was able to share all of her with me. And, you know, I remember this fifth step. It was really like a pivotal point in my life. I guess I was probably about a year sober, maybe a year and a half sober, and we were actually at a retreat in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and we had done my fifth step we did it on the beach for a little bit. We did it in the hotel lobby. We ended up going to Denny's and then back out on the beach. And I remember when it was over, like I told this woman who I was, and she still loved me. And it's really important for me to pass that on to other women. But she said, you know, you go back up to your hotel room and I want you to read step 6 and 7 out of the big book. And you read that into action where it talks about like we're not making mortar without sand and make sure we haven't skimped on the first 5 proposals. And when I did that, like I remember thinking like, yes, yes, yes. You know, I haven't skimped. I'm ready. I want to let go of these character defects. I mean, I just spent, you know, hours talking about them. And so I read step 6 and step 7. And, you know, step 6 is just this little short, tiny paragraph in our big book. And so I thought, you know, I'm willing. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say the 7th step prayer. And I fully expected the next morning to like wake up and those defects of character be removed. I'm going to take that you're not laughing at me, but that you're laughing with me because you know that that didn't happen, that wasn't my experience. You know, in AA, you taught me how to gain and to build a relationship with a higher power. And when I came to AA, you know, we have those cliches, those little things like group of drunks and good orderly direction and a gift of desperation. And I was definitely blessed with a gift of desperation. And while step 6 and 7 maybe didn't change my life there in that hotel room, they have and are changing my life today. And it's very much about this relationship with a higher power. Like I said, when I came to you, I had this gift of desperation. When I was in high school, I'm somebody who... you know, like I believed in some kind of thing that made the seasons change and made the grass grow, something like that, some kind of spirit of the universe, but not any kind of God that I could have a personal relationship with. I thought that was silly and that was kind of weak. But, you know, on my way through drinking, on my way to you guys, I definitely became teachable. And here in AA, you taught me how to build a relationship with a higher power. And you told me that I could choose, you know, I could choose what God meant to me. And I could take responsibility for that. And by the time I was doing that step 6 and step 7 in my hotel room after my fifth step that night, I was beginning to build a relationship with my higher power. But like I said, those 2 steps didn't change my life then, but that they're changing my life today. Today I know that a relationship, a personal relationship with a higher power, that's not weakness at all. That for me, that's where I find strength. You know, I can have confidence in my higher power when I don't have confidence in myself. And in that relationship, I can find, you know, really true freedom and liberty. I remember a friend of mine saying, you know, it's like on the penny, it says, in God we trust that there's liberty. And that's an amazing thing. I had a sponsor one time talk to me a lot about humility. And she, you know, she said humility is being teachable. It's being right-sized, which is really important. I don't know about you, but I'm somebody who can like have this great big giant big ego and things like that, but then somehow at the same time think I'm the lowliest person in the whole wide world. And so this sponsor, she talked to me about humility as being giving up who we think we are for who our higher power wants us to be. And that's, for me, that's the definition that I'm kind of learning to try to explore. You know, because like I said, I'm either somebody who thinks like, oh yeah, I'm all that, and I don't think that that's who my higher power wants me to be. But often and more frequently, I think I'm somebody who doesn't have anything to offer. You know, in my relationships, in my home group even, at my job, I've always been the youngest person. And for most of my life, I always thought that, you know, I'm not smart enough. I don't have enough experience, that I don't have anything to offer. And today I know that like that's not really what God thinks, you know, that's not what God thinks. And how can God use that? And it's actually been in AA that I've learned that we all have something to offer. You taught me that when you showed me how to be a greeter and how to welcome new women, how to be a part of the home group and to be an equal in the home group. And so you've taught taught me that, again, we all have something to offer. And that's pretty amazing. And like I said today, I know that a relationship with a higher power, that for me, that's not weakness anymore. But today, that's probably one of the biggest facts in my life that I'm really thankful for. And I'm also thankful, like I said, that you know. We get to decide what we believe, and we take responsibility for that. AA has given me personally a rich and wonderful life, and I know that it's done the same thing for you guys, or else you wouldn't be here, you know? I think also, at the same time, like, I'm really fortunate that I got sober in a group that believed in the three legacies about recovery, unity, and service. So pretty early on, I remember that guy, the AA guru, who'd been sober since I got born, he said, Rachel, your imagination is gonna be fired. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, that's so cool. I didn't know that it was in the big book. I just hadn't gotten that far along yet. But, he was right. In Alcoholics Anonymous, there's so much amazing stuff to do. So much stuff to do. You know, I'm really fortunate that I've been able to work with some women and take them through the big book and take them through the steps and see their lives come together. And there's nothing more exciting than that. There's nothing more amazing to just to sit on the sidelines and see God's work happen. But there's more. I mean, that's not the biggest, most important thing. We get to take AA into corrections facilities, and we get to take AA to professionals who might come in contact with drunks. For me, my niche has been in general service. I was probably about 3 months sober, something like that, and a guy said, Rachel, you know, you're a member of this home group, and maybe you should stick around after the meeting for our group conscience. And guys, like, I thought, oh, I better, like, so I called work and canceled work that day because I thought that you needed me to be there. And like, he just didn't know what door that he opened up. But anyways, so I was able to, I was elected the alternate GSR, and I was able to tag along with our GSR to my first assembly. And I remember, like, I don't know everything that they were talking about at that assembly. I remember the delegates' report. I remember the different officers giving their reports. But I knew that there was something magical happening and that I wanted to be a part of that magic. And that night, there were two DCMs co-chairing a meeting, and the meeting was, is your group in the loop? And they were talking about your group being part of the upside down triangle in that chain of communication in general service. And I remember, like, oh my God, my home group's not doing everything. They're not doing everything right. What are we going to do? Like, we're in crisis. And I bombarded those two DCMs after the meeting with like 1,000 questions. And I'm pretty sure they just didn't know what to do with me. And they finally just said, it's okay, Rachel, you're here. And that's what matters, you know? So I was, you know, I had to save my home group. And I realized today that they really didn't need saving. But that I had found my place. I found my place in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I've been in love personally with general service ever since then. And today I get to serve in North Carolina as the Area 51 delegate. And that is probably the biggest, just the most amazing, I want to say honor, but I'm not sure it's the right word, that I've gotten to experience. That my area has entrusted me to serve them and to serve our worldwide fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's an awesome thing. And that's not, you know, that's not me. That's me letting go of who I think I am for who my higher power wants me to be. And, you know, if it can happen, like, if I can get right-sized, then I know that it's everybody else can get right-sized too. So I'm supposed to talk about the Southeast now. And so this is what was suggested, like, the Southeast is bigger than a bread box, but it's smaller than a planet. I don't know. I'm sorry, Chet. This is going to put a lot on you guys, Marshall and Beth. What I do know about the Southeast, when I was elected our area's alternate delegate, I got to attend the delegates get together for the Southeast region. And so I got to meet a lot of people from across the Southeast, and just the amount of love that was shared and the experience that was freely, just so freely given, freely shared, was really humbling. It was really amazing to be a part of. And serving as I'm a new delegate. I'm a panel 65 delegate. So when I went to the General Service Conference, this was my first time. And, you know, I was deer in headlights, pretty terrified. Yeah, I know, it's hard to believe. Like, I started crying before I got off the elevator into the hospitality suite. And, you know, the Southeast it just kind of scooped me up and took me along. And Marshall said, you just have to be yourself. And that's all we have to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and be ourself. And I'm thankful, Chet, to have been asked to fill in. And I'm thankful for you guys letting me do this and listening to me. I hope you have a great, great weekend.
Wonderful. Thank you. I told in introduction, I said my sobriety date was July 25th, 1984. That was, in fact, the first day that I was sober. My first meeting was sometime in the first week or two of August of 1984. And the reason why I went to that meeting was because a counselor, not a addictions counselor, it was a marriage counselor, found out that I had been arrested on July 24th, 1984, for driving under the influence when I rolled my car over in an orange grove, which is another story. And part of my story was that several years before that, I had quit drinking for 4 years because my wife at the time convinced me the reason why I didn't have a good job was that I drank too much. Never used the A word, just I drank too much. So after this particular event in July, I concluded that I probably should stop drinking. And since I had done it for 4 years before, I figured decision was already made, but he found out and he said, before you come back next time, go to an AA meeting. And I said, but you don't understand. I have quit drinking for 4 years on my own and I can do it again. Thank you. And he said to me, go and learn how to ask for help. And that has stuck with me for a long time. I have spent almost 31 years learning how to ask for help. But anyway, I was going to go to one AA meeting just to satisfy him that he didn't know what he was talking about. One meeting, that was it. And I walked in, and the chair of the meeting was a woman, very obviously from New York, not from the Southeast, very obviously from New York. And in qualifying, she said, I never went to a restaurant that didn't serve alcohol. And that got me. That simple, simple statement went right from her into my heart. And I made that thing that I think has given the power of Alcoholics Anonymous for 80 years, that identification. I didn't identify with her gender. I didn't identify with her age. I didn't identify with the fact that she was obviously from New York. What I identified with was that alcohol ran her life, just like alcohol ran my life. Would you welcome our second speaker from South Carolina, Marshall C.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Marshall. I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is the Camelback Group. We're in Greenville, South Carolina. My sobriety date is March 1st, 1993. You know, this discussion is one. Southeast U.S., say hello to our neighbors or welcome to our neighbors. The thing is that when I first saw that, I was trying to find, like, what am I going to say about the Southeast? You know, what can I say about the Southeast? And it's kind of fortunate. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my experience I think that's a good way of talking about the Southeast. I started recovery in Area 30, which is Eastern Massachusetts. I was born in Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, Mary. What happened is that I believe South Carolina was the last place I thought I was ever going to be. You know, I didn't see how that was going to happen. And the only thing I knew about South Carolina was geography books and history books. All right. I was kind of fortunate. My graduating class in Boston, Massachusetts, we were all the public servants, the policemen, the firemen, the doctors, the court officers, you know, the politicians. I mean, I really have to do something stupid if I was going to leave Massachusetts. And I'll tell you what, I'm an alcoholic, but I didn't do that thing that ended stuff other than the suffering continually over and over and over again. So what happens is that, and my mother was born in Union, South Carolina. So I decided to go to the first family reunion. My parents didn't talk about South Carolina. So I decided to go to the first family reunion. And I go down there. What I did like about South Carolina is my first attraction to South Carolina is beautiful. It has a sapphire blue sky, it has red dirt, and it had all the greenery. I was down there in September. In Massachusetts, in September, you're getting ready for winter, you know. And in September, it was still 80 degrees in South Carolina. And we was going to some place to visit, and as we're driving down the road, it's almost like I'm following a painter's brush. You know, and the new black top, the red dirt on the side, the green, the sapphire blue sky. I thought it was beautiful. So what happens is my cousins take me to a real estate agent. And while I'm there, the agent told me I could buy anything I wanted to. And what I did, I looked right at my cousin and said, I'll be right back. I had been working long enough where I could retire. You know, I was fortunate I didn't lose my job because of alcoholism. And as a matter of fact, I had been working for 16 years when I got sober, you know. And I think I had about 5 more years before I maxed out. So they brought me to a real estate agent. And what happens is if I'm having a good conversation with somebody, sooner or later what happens, something about recovery comes out. And so with the real estate agent, I told them that I was in recovery. I was a recovering alcoholic. And he said, well, I got a friend who goes to AA meetings. Do you do that? So I said, yeah, I do. And he said, well, I'll call him and he'll fax me over a meeting schedule. And this is in Greenville, South Carolina. So, and it's kind of funny too, guy. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. And Greenville, South Carolina reminds me of that movie Gone with the Wind. You know? you know, they have a couple of buildings that might be 15 stories, you know. But the thing was is that when he faxed over this meeting schedule, when I opened it up, I said, there's enough meetings down here for me to stay sober. So what I did is when I went home, I told everybody I was moving to South Carolina. And, you know, I got a couple of reactions. You know, don't you think that's kind of fast? I mean, you've never been down there before. But what had happened was, is I had made my mind up. I believed that if I could stay in conscious contact with my higher power, I would be all right. And I guess being in Massachusetts, I was around alcoholics who shared their experience, strength, and hope with me, you know. And I had found myself in service work outside of the group. I had been a DCM. I had been a chair for corrections. I've been a coffee maker. I've been a greeter, you know. And I guess in my spiritual awakening, I believed that if I could stay active like that, I could stay sober. So what happens is that when I moved to South Carolina, I guess I have enough conversations with other recovering alcoholics. It might be a good idea if you do exactly what you've been doing. So when I got to South Carolina, for some reason, I did the first 3 days I was there, I did not go to a meeting. And I tell you what, I got there Sunday night. Monday morning when I woke up, no, not Monday morning, Wednesday morning when I woke up, my head was spinning. I was in trouble, you know. So I got to go to a meeting. I can't put this off any longer. I got to go to a meeting today. So what happens is I go, I find my meeting, and actually it's the Camelback group. And when I get there, the first three men that come into the room, each one of them is doing one thing that I'm active in doing in service. One was corrections, the other one was the GSR, and the other one was the group representative to the intergroup office. And I knew that if I could find these three things, the intergroup office, the district meeting, and the area assembly, well, I'm definitely going to be connected with the people that I need to be around. So, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, I've only been down here for a week. And it's quite clear that South Carolina could definitely use some tips from me about recovery, you know. This is how you do this. You don't do it like that. And I spent the whole month in South Carolina figuring out how I was going to tell you guys what to do, you know. And I'm glad that I go to meetings on a regular basis, though. Because what happens is if somewhere it catches up, you know, so-and-so's been sober, you know, this isn't his first day for recovery. This isn't her first day for recovery. You know, and I hear the shared experiences. So it's quite obvious that people in South Carolina have been reading the big book. You know, they've been reading AA Comes of Age. They've been reading the service manual, you know. They go to these meetings. They go to the intergroup meeting. They go to the district meeting. They go to area assemblies. It's quite obvious because the conversation is there, and they, you know, as they're sharing. And so the thing, you know, you come to the conclusion that if you're going to live in South Carolina, then you got to do recovery the way South Carolina does it, you know. So of course, getting, you know, I think. In the big book where it says that resentment is our number one offender, well, isolation is also a big offender for me. And like when I'm by myself, I start having the one-on-one conversations, you know. So to avoid that, I got to be, and that's what service does. It's kind of hard to do service in Alcoholics Anonymous and you're not around other people. You don't have telephone numbers and people aren't calling you. It's kind of hard, you know. And so what that does is it keeps me from isolating and it keeps me from talking to myself. And what was really so incredible about that, I think in South Carolina, if there was an attraction in South Carolina, it's the unity. The thing where, especially where, you know how we talk about the trusted servant. The thing about the trusted servant, if you can lead by example, then you will never have a problem being helped. If that's the example that you lead, you know. And it's not the example of authority. It's just the example of being useful and helpful, you know. And here I am. I don't know. I guess this is my first year. A year goes by in South Carolina, and I become my group's GSR. And then from being the GSR at the district, I became the DCM. And the thing that's so surprising about this is that I've only been down here 1 year, 2 years, and there are definitely other active alcoholics in South Carolina. There are definitely people that are grateful for their recovery, you know? And so it's kind of puzzling, you know, why choose me? I just got here, you know? But there are some things about recovery that I haven't learned yet, you know? And so what happens is that the repetition of showing up and, you know, if you're supposed to be somewhere at 9 o'clock, you're actually there at 9 o'clock, you know. If you tell someone you're going to do something, you actually do it. You know, you do that over and over again. I think especially in South Carolina, you don't tell somebody you're going to become the committee chair, you're going to become the area secretary, you're going to become the area chair. You don't tell somebody that. They tell you that you're going to be that. Yeah. You don't pick your position. There's no campaigning. You end up places. So what happens is that 10 years later in South Carolina, I become Area 62, Panel 64, the delegate. I become the trusted servant of South Carolina. And when I think about that, 10 years ago, I didn't even know South Carolina existed. So when I saw this title, Southeast U.S., say hello to our neighbors. The other thing about the Southeast region, there are 13 areas. All right, and we go as far as Mississippi, Louisiana are our western borders. And then we have Kentucky, West Virginia, Virginia. We have North Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina area. And Florida has two areas. And what happens is that if you're somewhere else in the United States, and if you're tired of living there, the Southeast region might be one of the best moves that you could ever make. Because you would definitely be around people who know how to love and know how to be united, And you would never see this in the newspaper. You would never see this in any other book. So the other thing, too, is that's how incredible our fellowship is, I got to South Carolina. I went to my first meeting when they said, is anybody here new, anybody visiting? I raised my hand. Before the week was over, I had 30 friends, And the thing is, okay, maybe we didn't grow up together. But, if you can have an honest conversation with someone and really, it really answers some questions and stuff like that, I mean, when I think about that, I get that from my family, my brothers and my sisters, and I get that from childhood friends, which I'm fortunate enough to still have, So, Southeast region, the Southeast, say hello to our neighbors. And if you're in Atlanta, you're in Georgia, you are in the Southeast. I know, especially if you're from the Northeast, maybe Central. In the Southeast, whether we know you or not, we say good morning. If you drive your car down our street, we wave, when you walk into a store, good morning, sir, may I help you, And that caught me the first time I went in a store in South Carolina. And I came into the store, and he said, good morning, sir. How are you doing today? I automatically turned around. I thought somebody was standing behind me, So what has happened is that I'm from South Carolina now, I've definitely started living here. My recovery is in South Carolina. And the thing that's really incredible about that is the experiencing unity the way that I'm experiencing. And I'll tell you what, and I'm from the Northeast region. I used to be a nerd or whatever it was called. But, and they definitely are united up there, and they definitely have a great gratitude for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just surprising of all the things that I didn't know about the Southeast, And you couldn't have told me any of this stuff. But that's how incredible our fellowship is. We can go anywhere we want in the world, If there is an AA meeting there, you won't be by yourself, You won't be by yourself. So I haven't been down here really long enough to talk about the history of the Southeast region. But I'll tell you what, in September 2014, last year, we had a Southeast region forum in Puerto Rico. Now, other than that, before I went to Puerto Rico, the only thing I know about Puerto Rico was that it was a vacation place, But Alcoholics Anonymous is very strong in Puerto Rico. If you go to Puerto Rico, you can stay sober. I didn't know that, Somewhere in 1946 or in the middle of 1940s, somebody Spanish from Puerto Rico either visit Bill in New York or Bill was in Puerto Rico and they met. But Puerto Rico became one of the opening doors for Alcoholics Anonymous in South America through Mexico, you know. I didn't know that. Also, at the South, they hosted the Southeast region, and they had a delegate that was on panel 27. So their unity, that was an example of the kind of unity that's in the Southeast region. We stay together. You know, we stay together, we stay united. And those two things, there's one fellowship and there's one primary purpose. Those things never change. They never change. Bye.
I left my phone in the room, so I'm trying to use someone else's, and that's never a good idea. Brief announcement. Anybody who is here utilizing the hearing impaired active listening device, assistive living device, the frequency for this room is 103.0. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I'm telling a hearing impaired that this is the frequency. I think we need to work on that. As I said, it is my privilege to serve as the Southeast Regional Trustee to the General Service Board. I have been privileged to be allowed to do a certain number of jobs in Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it be an elected office in the intergroup or the central office or as a district committee member, whether it was as a delegate to the General Service Conference from North Florida Area 14 or to be a Southeast Regional Trustee, I have done all of those jobs as best as I could and hopefully left AA a little better for my presence. I don't know about that, but what I do know is that every one of those jobs have changed me. And sometimes I think, which one was it that had the biggest impact on my life? Which one made the biggest change? And it comes to me that the biggest job that I have ever been allowed to do was when I was a year or two sober. And at that time, in the mid-80s, smoking, non-smoking, was very much alive and well. And the group that I was in Orlando had only smoking meetings, and there had been attempts to start a non-smoking meeting for quite some time. And finally, someone had an idea that they would make a small inroad just to see how it would work. And I was self-employed, so I could do pretty much what I wanted to and did. And so I was available to get to the meeting early, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at noon, to get to the meeting early and capture the ashtrays so the smokers couldn't take over the meeting. Big job, huh? But that one made the biggest change in my life, because that was the first time that I had actually given of myself to an institution in Alcoholics Anonymous, in that case, the group. And I moved from being a visitor to being an actual member. And those who are involved in some form of institutional service have learned that transfer from being a visitor to being an honest-to-goodness shareholding member just made a huge difference in my life. And so I recommend it if you haven't tried it. And from South Florida, would you welcome Beth D.
Good Hi, everybody. I'm Beth, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, and I am a member of the Into Action group in Coral Springs, Florida. And I have always subscribed to the belief that my sponsor taught me early on that you should only have one group. And now I have two other home groups. I'm also I have a home away from home group in Boulder Creek, California, the mountain group. And there's a friend of mine from that group is here tonight, today, and I really am so delighted to have him here. And I recently found another home away from home group here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm also an associate member of the Knott's Landing group in Duluth, Georgia. And I travel to both California and Georgia a lot, and I need to go to meetings wherever I am. Meetings are the places that keep me grounded, and so I found that it was important to find a group where I could feel comfortable when I travel. And because I go to California a lot and go to Georgia a lot, that works really well for me. But my home group is really the group in Florida, and that's where I do my service work, and that's where I participate, and that's where I vote. But if you travel to another town outside of your home, the very best thing you can possibly do is go to a meeting there, and you will see what a difference it will make in your recovery. It's really quite wonderful. So anyway, when Chet called me, he asked me if I would speak a little bit about the Southeast region, and because I've been an active member of the general service structure in the Southeast region for a while, I thought I would tell you about some of the changes that I've seen take place in our region. You know, the general service structure started in Bill created it with the help of some other wonderful people, alcoholic and non-alcoholic advisors, in 1951. The first General Service Conference was held in 1951, and we became Area 5, the Southeast region in that, at that time, and we, in South Florida, where I'm from, we became Area 15. Each of you, wherever you live in the United States and Canada, are a part of an area. You might not even know what area you're a part of, but you can certainly find that out. And every area has a delegate who represents your area at the General Service Conference, which is held once a year. So we became Area 15 in South Florida in 1951. And for a long time, we were just South Florida. Florida is actually divided into 2.5 areas. South Florida is everything south of Orlando. North Florida is north of Orlando. And then we have the Panhandle, which, you know, kind of sticks out to the west, and because they're so close to Alabama, the panhandle of Florida is actually part of Alabama. And most of the areas are numbered. They're all numbered, but most of them were, when they were originally created in 51, they were numbered alphabetically, so that Area 1 is Alabama. However, we have added a few more areas over the years, so we now have a total of 93 areas. When I got sober, we had 91 areas, and I watched them create two more areas for the general service structure, and that was a really interesting thing to observe. But most of the changes in the Southeast region, and Marshall talked about the various areas that make up the Southeast region, most of the changes actually have taken place in Area 15, where I live, and South Florida. In 1985, and I have to tell you that when I got sober, I was brand new sober, a couple of months sober, and a friend of mine who I used to hang with said to me one day, "Well, I can't hang with you this afternoon, Beth, because I've got to go to a meeting." And I said, "I'll go." And she said, "Oh, no, you don't want to go to this. This is boring. This is a general service meeting, and you do not want to go to that." But I said, "I'll go." I would go any place. You know, my sponsor believed in total immersion, and I went to it. Wherever there was a meeting, I would go to it. So I went to this general service meeting, and it happened to be the meeting where the delegate was giving his delegate's report. Now, I didn't know what a delegate was. I didn't know what the conference was. I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. It went totally over my head, but I grasped an energy in that room that I continue to feel today whenever I am in an environment with general service people. And what I've discovered, and of course this is something that I discovered sometime later, is that most of the people who are active in the general service structure have really good recovery And they practice unity and they practice service. And with those three legacies, you've got a three-legged stool and it works really well. So I captured the energy of general service. And of course, I wanted to be a GSR immediately. My sponsor made me read the literature. and the pamphlet, the GSR, about the GSR said that might be the most important position in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she made me read it, and it suggested that you have approximately 2 years of recovery, and she made me wait. And wait I did, chomping at the bit every moment, but I waited, and finally when I was just about 2 years sober, I was elected an alternate GSR. But I started going to the General Service Assemblies from the very beginning. I mean, I was 6 months sober and I was going to the Assembly. Not only was I going to the Assembly, but at one of those very early assembles, I went to the microphone to tell them how to do it. The chairperson of my district, when I came back to the table, said, "Beth, you really need to listen." That was not my strong suit. But anyway, in 1985, a couple of years after I had begun attending the General Service assemblies, the Virgin Islands requested that they become a part of South Florida area. And we, of course, welcomed them. And so the Virgin Islands, which is made up of the United States Virgin Islands and the British Virgin Islands and Antigua, which is an independent country, all became part of the South Florida area. And that was really pretty exciting. And it was the first time that a country other than the United States or Canada had begun participating in the U.S.-Canada general service structure. So it was a little bit unusual. For many years, that wasn't the first time that another country had become part of the general service structure, because before that, Bermuda was part of North Carolina. And they participated as a part of North Carolina, which is Area 51, for some time. And then they decided to separate from North Carolina. They developed their own service structure that was strong enough that they were able to participate in the Atlantic, I don't know, conference. There's a conference for countries in the Caribbean and the, I don't know, countries that don't have their own service, general service conferences. And then they have conferences for those countries. And there's the Asia-Oceanic Conference, and there's a Sub-Saharan African Conference, and there are various conferences for smaller countries. And I'm not sure where Bermuda is participating today, but I know they have Alcoholics Anonymous is very active in Bermuda. So anyway, we became included the Virgin Islands, and I had the opportunity to travel to the Virgin Islands quite a few times. We had a local forum there, and I went down there to give my delegate's report when I served as delegate several times. And it's a really neat thing to go to, because in the Virgin Islands, they hold one of their general service quarterly weekends every year on the island of St. John, and it's at a campsite, and they call it Camp Easy Does It. And it's really neat. And during the weekend, they have a meeting that takes place in the water, in the Caribbean. They call it the wet meeting for dry people. And it's kind of a red ball meeting. You know, a red ball meeting is when they toss the red ball at, only this is a beach ball meeting. And they toss the beach ball around the circle, and it's really cool. And then they have their Saturday afternoon AA meeting around a campfire, and it's just really wonderful. And more recently, the island of St. Martin has become part of the Virgin Islands. They joined them. And then, most recently, in 2010, the Cayman Islands asked that they could become part of the Area 15. And I remember when they called me and asked if they could participate, and I said, well, maybe you could be part of the Virgin Islands, which is District 14. And then they told me to look at a map. Turns out the Cayman Islands is nowhere near the Virgin Islands, and I began to become a little bit familiar with the geography of our region. Another really unique and interesting fact about the Southeast region is that we are home to the oldest conference in the United States. It was called the Southeastern Conference, and it was started in 1944, which was when Alcoholics Anonymous was only 7 years old, and a group of people in the Southeast region decided they wanted to get together just for fellowship, and they formed this conference. And sadly, this year, we are going to be holding the last of the Southeastern conferences. We've always called it the granddaddy of them all because it was the first conference to ever be held in the United States and Canada. But this year we are holding the last conference because we realize that it's really outgrown its usefulness and there are so many other conferences that have come in now to take its place. But we will be having the last Southeastern conference in Memphis, Tennessee. It's going to be our 71st conference. It's going to be in Memphis from August 20th to 23rd. And we invite you to come on down, and we would love to see you there. And you can help us lay the Southeastern Conference gently and lovingly to rest. So we would love to see you there. 4 years ago, the Southeast region held its first unofficial service assembly. And I say unofficial because it wasn't actually created by the region. It was actually sponsored initially by Area 71, which is the Commonwealth of Virginia, for any of you who are visiting from Virginia today. And it was called the Southern States Alcoholics Anonymous Service Assembly. And we fondly refer to it as SASA, SASA. And we love SASA. It's an incredibly wonderful conference. It's been going to be held this year in West Virginia and in November. And we invite you to come to that. It's modeled in a similar way after some of the other regional conferences. There's PRASA in the Pacific region and NARASA in the Northeast region. And I suspect that some of the other regions have their service assemblies as well. At the present time, SASA is being held every other year, the year that we don't host a regional forum in our region. However, this might change once the Southeastern Conference is no longer being held. Those of us who have attended the first two SASAs are very excited about this new event, and we expect that it will be effective in encouraging more AA members to participate in the service structure. So we invite you to come on down to that, and that's going to be held in this year in August in West Virginia. I have all the information if you would like it. I'll see you afterwards. So now I want to talk to you a little bit about myself and my recovery. And I told you about how excited I was to become part of Alcoholics Anonymous and part of the general service structure. I have to tell you, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and my sobriety date is February 5th of 1983, I was broken. And most of us came to Alcoholics Anonymous broken. Nobody waltzes into Alcoholics Anonymous and says, oh, I think I'll go to a couple of meetings. I think I like this. We all come because we're desperate. We're, holding on like grim death. And I came bankrupt in every area of my life. I was barely functioning physically. And yet, if you looked at my life, if you were my neighbor across the street, peeking out of your curtains and looking at me, you would have thought that I was functioning just fine. I had a job. I had a home. I was a single parent raising two children. And I appeared on the outside to be functioning effectively. And yet on the inside, I was crumbling. And I knew that my life was on a downward spiral. And so many of you, I know, can relate to that, because when I talk about that at meetings, people always come up to me afterwards and say, I felt the same way that you did. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of a coincidence. It was purely a series of circumstances that I could not have created for myself. And I ended up at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was not one of those people who said, I'm home. I was one of those people who was panicky and terrified and couldn't talk to anybody. And because I was panicky and terrified and couldn't talk to anybody, I figured out, I was pretty smart, you know, I figured out at my first meeting that the newcomer who was walking through the door didn't know that they shouldn't have anything to do with me. But anyone who was there for any length of time would say, stay away from her. And so very early, I'm talking about the second week that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was watching the door for the new woman to walk through the door. And I would see a newcomer come in, and I'd grab her, and I'd sit her down. I'd introduce myself, and I'd sit her down and next to me. And you know why I did that? I did that so I had someone to sit with. And then I'd get her a cup of coffee, and I'd get her some cookies, and I'd get a meeting list book, and I'd take a pen, and I'd circle all the meetings in the local area, and I'd give her my phone number, because that's what they told you to do. But I did something else. I took her phone number, and the next day I'd call her, and I'd say, hi, this is Beth, and I met you last night, and I'm going to a meeting tonight. Would you like to go? And I'd pick her up, and I'd take her to a meeting. And you know why I did that? So I had someone to go to a meeting with. I got a sponsor right away because I knew a lot about Alcoholics Anonymous before I got here, and I knew that was something that you were supposed to do, and so I was willing to do whatever you asked me to do. I was, from the very beginning, I was willing to go to any length to get it, and I was willing to follow your suggestions, and so I got a sponsor. You know why I got a sponsor? Because I needed someone to lean on. I needed someone to depend on, and my sponsor was the most incredible sponsor in the world, and she allowed me to lean on her, and she allowed me to depend on her. And she helped me as we worked the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous. She helped me to transfer that dependence first to my home group and then to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and ultimately to a power greater than myself. And today I have an incredibly close relationship with a power greater than myself. And I call that a higher power, my God. And you can call your higher power whatever you want. Whatever your higher power is, as long as it's something greater than you, as long as it works for you, then that's your higher power. And my higher power and I have a most amazing relationship, and I'm so incredibly grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me that. You know, I believe that God brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous brought me to God. I did not have any kind of a comfortable belief in a power greater than myself when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I believed in God. I believed that there had to be something that kept the planets in their orbits and made gravity work. But other than that, that was as far as my understanding of alcoholics went and of God went. And it was in Alcoholics Anonymous that you taught me that G-O-D could stand for group of drunks. And then you taught me that it could stand for good, orderly direction. And I held on to that for a long time. And ultimately, I came to find a power greater than myself that is my own personal higher power. And I have an incredibly personal conscious contact with that power greater than myself today. And I hope that you will be able to find that kind of personal conscious contact with your higher power, because it is truly something remarkable to behold. So I started on the journey, and I was willing to do everything my sponsor suggested. You know why I did everything my sponsor suggested? Because I wanted her to pat me on the back and tell me how wonderful I was. And I discovered that in Alcoholics Anonymous, I did an awful lot of the right things for the wrong reasons. And you know what? It doesn't matter why you do them. Just do them. And I did them, and I followed my sponsor's suggestions. And I was willing to step out on faith. I was willing to do things that were uncomfortable. She told me to call people in Alcoholics Anonymous. She told me to call her every day. When I got sober, we didn't have call waiting. We didn't have caller ID, and we didn't have cell phones. We had busy signals, and I would pray for a busy signal. The telephone weighed 100 pounds, but my sponsor told me to do it, and I did it, and I called people. I used the telephone. Telephone therapy is amazing. I went to a huge number of meetings. I would see a flyer, and I'd say, what's this? And she would say, oh, you want to go to that, Beth. That's great. You'll enjoy that. And I would go to it, and I would enjoy it. The very first thing I ever did in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 1 week sober, and I was sitting in the meeting room, and when the meeting ended, I didn't want to leave because there was something in the room that was just calling me, but I couldn't talk to you. But I looked, and I saw a man cleaning up the ashtrays. And I said, I can do that. So I helped him clean up the ashtrays. And then he took me and he showed me how we dumped the coffee grounds into the garbage. And then he took me outside. We didn't have a kitchen. Took me outside and there was a spigot on the side of the building. And he showed me how we used the spigot to wash out the coffee pot. I want you to know that when I left that meeting, my wheels didn't touch the ground. I was flying, and from the very, very first week that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned that if I am doing something for you, I get out of me, and I don't have that incredible feeling of self, panic and turmoil and all the squiggly worms that were running around inside my gut all the time. As long as I got out of me, I was a little teeny bit more comfortable in my own skin. And so I continue to do those things today. As a matter of fact, I had the incredible privilege, as have Marshall and Rachel, who is continuing to serve. I had the incredible privilege of being the delegate for the South Florida area, and I served panels 51 and 53. I was a 3-year delegate back in 2002, 3, and 4. The woman before me passed away, and so, I served her term, finished her term, and then served my own term. And during those 3 years, I was very, very busy. I had a lot going on. I had an email box that was full every day. I had phone calls coming in every day. And as soon as I rotated out of that position, the very first thing I did is I went back to my home group and I raised my hand and I said, I'd like to make coffee next month. And I love making coffee. I love it. It makes me feel a part of. I love setting up the chairs. I love staying late and making sure that the room is locked and that the air conditioning has been turned down. And it makes me feel a part of, and I continue to do those things today. So Alcoholics Anonymous is just really important to me. My spiritual growth has been just something that I never, ever dreamed possible. I didn't have an understanding of a higher power when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I, as I said, I have this wonderful relationship now. And I want to share with you a couple of the tools that are really, really important to me that I continue to use. I started using them when I was really new in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I continue to use them today. And one of those tools is journaling. Journaling is incredibly powerful to me. And if you have never tried journaling, I strongly recommend it. I get up, I set my alarm so that I can get up an hour earlier than I normally would get up, so that I had time to journal and read a little bit of spiritual material and meditate. And I write 3 pages every morning. And you know what? It's not until the 3rd page that I begin to understand why I'm writing, because I will get up in the morning and say to myself, maybe I'll skip today. And then I say, no, Beth, just do it. I love that expression. I thank that shoe company that came up with it. So I will sit down and I will journal. On the first 2 pages, I'll be writing and nothing's coming. And all of a sudden, the 3rd page, the answers to whatever's going on in my life jump out of the page at me. Literally jump out of the page at me. And it's really interesting, because sometimes I'll be writing I this and I that and I the other thing. And all of a sudden, it's as if God is writing to me, and God is saying, you, Beth, and you this and you the other thing. You know I'm there for you, Beth. You know I'm taking care of you. Why would I drop you now? I've carried you this far. Why would I let your children suffer? Your children are my children also. And I get these incredible answers from my higher power. And so one day I got this idea, as I was writing, that I needed to come up with my own guidelines for me, my own list. And so I wrote my 12 commandments. Now, I have to admit to you that when I wrote them, I got a little confused. I kind of forgot that there were only 10 commandments, but I wrote 12 for me, and I'm going to share them with you because I really love them, and maybe you'd like to write your own 10 or 12 or 15 commandments. Write as many as you like, but here are my 12 commandments. Number 1, choose God. Number 2, love conquers fear. Number 3, breathe. Number 4, act as if. Number 5, forgive everyone. Number 6, smile and laugh often. Number 7, listen carefully. Number 8, follow directions. Number 9, enjoy the journey. Number 10, take time to meditate. Number 11, serve. Number 12, be here now. These work for me. Maybe you'll find something else that works for you. Now, I love the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous's 12-step promises us that if we are willing to follow the suggestions offered in the first 11 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that we will experience the ultimate promise of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is stated in the 12-step, and it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we then are able to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I recently read some symptoms of a spiritual awakening, and I thought I'd like to share them with you. So listen to these, and you'll be able to determine whether you have had a spiritual awakening. And some of them include an increased tendency to let things happen rather than make them happen. Frequent attacks of smiling. Frequent overwhelming episodes of appreciation. An unmistakable ability to enjoy each moment. A loss of the ability to worry. A loss of interest in judging others. A loss of interest in judging ourselves. And gaining the ability to love without expecting anything in return. If you're experiencing those, then you have had a spiritual awakening. And I believe that my spiritual awakening was as a result of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Service is my life. I take the statement in the big book which says our main purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and our fellows. And I commit myself to being of service to Alcoholics Anonymous and particularly to the women that I sponsor. And I thank some of them for being here today. And I thank you, all of you, for listening. And if there is anything that I can ever do for any of you, please do not hesitate to contact me. Thank you.